Chapter 9. The Will. Back at the castle, Rodolfo immediately went to tell his old mother the news, and they all gathered around the fire while Alfred read the will, translating it for Ernest as he went.
In this, my last will and
testament, I wish to undo a wrong I committed many years ago. I married a good and kind woman below my position. My excuse being that, like all men, I needed human warmth and comfort. My greatest crime was being ashamed of it, and never recognizing the fruit of that marriage, my son, Rodolfo. In this will, I ask his forgiveness and leave everything to him, declaring that he has the right to call himself Count Dracula. As for my firstborn, the unfortunate Radu, I know that Rodolfo will take care of him as long as he lives. I have taken this will to my grave with the knowledge that if it is ever found, it will be because the Dracula name has been cleared of all the lies spread by that evil Dr. Love, Magorski. I wish to thank Alfred Sackville Jones and Lord Ernest de Boy for helping my son Rodolfo to get what is rightfully his. I can now rest in peace. Count Vlad Dracula.
Alfred looked up from the handwritten letter with the Dracula seal and the Count's elaborate signature at the bottom.
Well, Rodolfo, old fellow, we shall have to call you Count from now on.
Rodolfo was so overjoyed that he got up and lifted his ancient mother into the air and kissed her 100 times on her wrinkled old face so that she actually smiled. Gregory, too, was jumping up and down, doing some sort of strange Romanian dance. Having put his mother down, Rodolfo then came and gave Alfred and Ernest kisses on both cheeks.
May I suggest, Count, that we open one of the late Count's excellent bottles of German wine? I think this calls for a celebration.
So the five of them celebrated to the early hours. They even got Ernest to join in singing some traditional Romanian songs. Of course, Alfred knew that many dangers lay ahead, but he did not wish to spoil the fun. Next morning, as usual, Alfred first said good morning to the portrait of the Count, whose cheeks were all rosy red, as if he too had drunk a little too much the night before. Then he looked out of the window over the castle walls, across to the river and down Dracula Valley. The storm was over, but the snow was at least 2 feet deep. Ernest was still fast asleep, now that he had no coffins to visit or vampire bats to see. The exciting part was over for him. Alfred shook him.
Wake up, old boy.
Alfred, really? Why do you always have to interrupt my dream at the most exciting moment? I can see I'll never get to the end.
Come on. We've got a long day ahead of us. First, we've got to bring these documents to the authorities. And I'm sure that the doctor's men are already on the road and will probably do anything to stop us.
The snow was too deep for the carriage, so Rodolfo rode Warrior, while Alfred and Ernest took a carriage horse each. As they were not sure that they would be returning to the castle, they took a bag full of their belongings and said goodbye to Mania and Gregory, who both had tears in their eyes. Alfred paid one last visit to their room and said goodbye to the portrait on the wall. He was almost certain he saw the Count's lips move. As they rode out of Dracula's castle, the silence was immense. All that could be heard was the muffled sounds of the river near the cemetery where the waterfall was. About a mile out, Alfred turned to Rodolfo.
If the doctor's men try to attack us, where is the most likely spot?
Either where the valley narrows, or where we have to cross the river, about a mile out of Vilcha.
They said little, just kept their eyes on the hills and trees around them, where a man with a gun might be hiding. The doctor's men were not waiting at the narrow pass, which surprised Rodolfo, and he wondered whether the doctor was going to attack them after all. Alfred, however, was sure that he would. And so, when they were halfway across the river, he stopped.
Gentlemen, get your guns ready.
No sooner had he spoken than a gun appeared from behind a tree and a shot rang out. The bullet whistled past Ernest's ear.
Good heavens, that was close.
They jumped off their horses and ran for shelter. They could now see that there were three attackers. Ernest, who had more experience fighting than the others, took charge.
Rodolfo, is it possible to cross the river at any other point?
About half a mile farther up, but there is no road.
If you'll let me have a warrior, I'll manage it all right. You keep them busy while I approach from behind.
So Ernest got up on the beautiful white horse, which was almost invisible in the snow, and rode off upriver. About half an hour later, a shot rang out, and they saw a body fall from behind one of the trees. Alfred saw his chance.
Rodolfo, let's get to the other side. Ernest won't give them any time to think about us.
2 minutes later, they were on the other side. By this time, Ernest had hit another, and the third had laid down his gun and was holding up a white handkerchief. Ernest appeared from behind a tree, followed by Warrior.
Well, that wasn't too difficult.
Then, out of the corner of his eye, Alfred saw a movement. It was the wounded man who was pointing his gun at Rodolfo.
Rodolfo, get down!
But it was too late. Rodolfo fell to the ground, his blood spilling onto the white snow. Ernest pointed his gun and shot the man. Ernest examined Rodolfo and found that he was still breathing, but the bullet had entered his chest and he was bleeding badly.
We've got to get him to Vilcha quickly. Alfred, throw the men's guns into the river and get that man to put the dead men onto a horse. Then let's get going.
They reached Vilcha about 20 minutes later. Ernest held Rodolfo in his arms and rode into Vilcha on Warrior. At the first inn, they got Rodolfo onto a bed and Ernest set to work, trying to save his life. 2 hours later, Ernest had managed to get the bullet out and the wound dressed. Alfred looked on in admiration.
I had no idea you were such an expert, dear boy.
Oh, did I never tell you I studied medicine for 2 years before turning to archaeology? You know, I think I would have made quite a good doctor.
I suppose it's all that blood you like, dear fellow. What are Rodolfo's chances of pulling through?
Oh, he'll live. But it may take a few days before he can get back onto his feet.
Suddenly they heard Rodolfo's voice.
Sir Alfred, get the mayor and the police chief to come. I want witnesses.
Straight away, old fellow.
Seeing Ernest's bare and bloody arms, Rodolfo realized that it was he who had saved his life.
Lord Ernest, I now owe you a life. How can I repay you?
One day, Count, I'd like to spend some time at the castle, just going through the archives. Would that be all right?
Anything, Lord Ernest. Anything.
Half an hour later, the mayor and the police chief arrived, and the documents were formally handed over. It was now up to the authorities to deal with Dr. Mogorski. Alfred was thinking.
It looks as if our job is over, Ernest, old fellow.
I'd really love to see those vampire bats again. Can't I go with the police to arrest the doctor?
First of all, we don't know where the doctor is. He's probably hiding by now. And his main aim now will be to kill us, not Rodolfo, before we get back to England and publish everything.
Quite so, old boy.
Rodolfo's in good hands, so I suggest we get out of here as quickly as possible. We have a long journey ahead of us.
I'm going to miss this place, Alfred, old fellow. It suits me.
I can't altogether agree with you, old boy. But I do believe Rodolfo will make a very good count. I always thought he was a very solid chap.
Chapter 10. The End. Alfred and Ernest said goodbye to Rodolfo, who could not thank them enough, and caught the 3:30 from Vilcha to Craiova, where they planned to pick up the train to Vienna. They, of course, had no news of the doctor and wondered whether he would use his money and power to send a team to try to kill them. Strangely enough, it was Ernest who was most concerned.
Do you know, Alfred, old fellow, we're not home and dry yet. It was we who uncovered his evil deeds, and he's not the type who forgives easily.
Do you really think he'll send some of his killers after us? Why would he bother?
It's a question of pride and honour, and these foreign fellows think such things are terribly important.
Alfred had great difficulty thinking of danger. He was already imagining himself back in his room in London.
What's the first thing you'll do when you get back, Ernest?
What a question. Let me see. Yes, I think I'll open a bottle of your finest wine, dear boy. What'll you do?
I'll go for a walk through the fog of London and stand on Tower Bridge and watch the boats go underneath.
Ernest laughed.
Really, Alfred, you're such a sentimentalist.
They arrived in Craiova at about 6 and had to wait an hour for their connection. They were waiting on the crowded platform when Alfred saw a man he thought he recognized.
Ernest, do you see that man over by the entrance? The one with the beard and the scar above his left eye. Does he ring a bell?
Don't think so, old fellow.
Probably my imagination.
However, Alfred kept an eye on him and noticed that he too got on the train to Vienna. There was something suspicious about him. He was dressed like a man of wealth, but looked like a boxer. It was about 4:45 in the morning, and they were about halfway to Vienna when the first attempt on their lives was made. Ernest was fast asleep and snoring so loudly that he was keeping Alfred awake. The door of their cabin opened, allowing a strip of light to enter. Alfred opened his eyes for a second and saw the man with the beard. He was holding a piece of rope in his hands and was obviously intending to strangle them both. Alfred wished he had put the derringer under his pillow, and also that Ernest was not fast asleep. He decided to wait and grab the man by the legs as soon as he got close enough to the bunk bed. Alfred was about to jump when he heard the man grunt and fall to the floor of the compartment. Ernest switched on the light and looked at the man lying on the floor, apparently dead.
It looks as if I saved your life, Alfred, old fellow. It's a good thing I don't sleep as deeply as you do.
But I don't.
Don't what?
Sleep soundly. You were the one snoring. I was wide awake.
Snoring? Was I really?
Ernest looked at the body.
I'm afraid I broke his neck. Well, what can a chap do if another chap tries to strangle him in the middle of the night? I suppose we'll have to explain this mess to the guard.
For the next 2 days, nothing unusual happened. It wasn't until they were outside Paris that the next attempt on their lives was made. They had got to know another passenger, a German by the name of Wolf Heinz. He said he was an ornithologist and was on his way to England to study a bird species there. Ernest, however, was quite suspicious because that particular species of bird wouldn't arrive in England for another 2 months. It all happened when they were having tea and cakes in the dining car. Herr Heinz had arrived first and had already ordered. Alfred was delighted to see the cherry cakes and tea waiting.
I say, Wolf, old chap, jolly nice of you.
They sat down and Wolf offered them a cake each. Ernest noticed that they smelt strongly of almond and suspected that Wolf had put cyanide in some of them. Rather than cause a fuss, he pretended to knock the cake out of Alfred's hand.
Frightfully sorry, old fellow. How clumsy of me. Good heavens. Look out there. That bird. Very unusual. What is it?
Wolf looked out of the window and tried hard to see the bird, during which time Ernest changed his cake for the one on Wolf's plate. Then he winked at Alfred so that he understood what was happening.
Oh dear, it must have flown away.
When he turned round, Alfred and Ernest were pretending to be finishing off their cakes, which Ernest had put into his pocket.
What lovely cakes, Wolf.
Wolf joined in and ate his. On arrival in Paris, they saw an empty coffin arrive and leave with a body in it. Ernest looked at Alfred and smiled.
Poor Wolf. And they did look like awfully nice cakes.
When they got off the train at Charing Cross, they really felt their adventure had ended. But they did not see the young man get into the cab behind them and follow them all the way. Suddenly a shot rang out. Alfred pushed Ernest to the ground. A man was standing on the pavement pointing a gun at them. Ernest was quite annoyed.
Dear me! And I was so looking forward to a nice cup of English tea.
The man in the street looked mad, his eyes moving wildly in his head.
You ruined my father. You will pay for this.
But by the time he had finished his last sentence, Ernest had got out his derringer and had shot him straight through the heart. They ran to the body, now lying in a pool of blood. In his pocket, Alfred found a passport with the name Nikolai Magorsky.
Really? These foreign fellows are hot-blooded, aren't they?
Ernest was more concerned about the body.
Now how are we going to explain this to the police?
For the next 3 months, Alfred and Ernest went everywhere looking over their shoulder. But it appeared that Nikolai was the last assassin.
Come on, hold out your glass, Ernest, old chap.
Alfred raised his glass in the air, and Ernest filled it with champagne.
Well, here's to a successful end to the Dracula affair. The Globe has been awfully good. Of course, they didn't believe a word of it, but they said that even as a work of fiction, it was worth publishing.
Oh, well done, old fellow.
Yes, we're going to call it The Real Count Dracula in 10 episodes. I have to admit that I'm going to make a fortune.
Well, I must tell you, old fellow, that you're not the only one who's had some success. I'm going to have an article published in the British Bat Society magazine on the vampire bat, and I've been booked to give talks on the subject all summer.
Oh, how superb! Let's drink to the late and present Count Dracula.
I wonder what happened to the doctor.
Probably took one of his deadly potions. He had nothing to live for.
Just then, there was a knock at the door, and Alfred's servant entered with a letter. Alfred opened it quickly.
Ah, it's from Rodolfo. Let's see what he has to say. Dear Alfred and Ernest,
I have some good and some bad news. The bad news is that my brother, Radu, died and was buried next to his father in the Dracula Cemetery. The good news is that the doctor is dead. He was found with all the blood sucked out of him, with his horrible bats standing on his body. He died as he deserved to, in the way that he killed his victims. The other good news is that I am getting married and would like you to come to my wedding. I am marrying the daughter of a count in Craiova. I know it may not be possible for you to come, but it would make me very happy, as I owe you my life and much more. Your true and devoted friend, Count Rodolfo Dracula.
Well, it is nice to know that everything turned out all right for him in the end. What about this wedding thing, then?
Let's decide tomorrow. Have some more champagne?
Some minutes later, there was another knock on the door, and Alfred's servant entered with another letter. Alfred opened it and looked at the name.
Frankenstein? Have you heard the name Frankenstein before?
Yes, I believe I have. Wasn't he that chap who created a monster?
Dear Alfred Sackville Jones, something terrible has happened. There have been reports that a family of monsters, looking like the monster my grandfather created, have been seen high up in a mountain in Switzerland. I do not know whether it is a lie or not. Could you please come and investigate? I have heard about your success with Count Dracula, and I want you to do the same for the Frankenstein name. Please reply as soon as possible. Yours, Albert Frankenstein.
Well, it sounds pretty exciting to me. When shall we leave?
Ernest, Ernest, old boy, I still haven't recovered from the Dracula affair.
Oh, what a spoiled sport you are.
Well, I won't say no. I'll decide tomorrow. Come on, let's enjoy this champagne and go for a walk to the Tower Bridge. I do love England at this time of year, don't you?